You are Locked On Wolverines, your daily podcast on the Michigan Wolverines, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Happy Saturday night, and it's certainly a happy Saturday night for Michigan basketball fans, because Michigan basketball ended up beating rival Michigan State in Ann Arbor. And as you can see, I am not there. Even though I am your man on the ground, I have not been that for basketball this year. Isaiah Hull, publisher of Wolverines Wire through USA Today Sports Media Group. And we're going to do mostly post-game, I think two segments, and then I want to talk about a little bit of football. Don't want to get completely away from football. We want to keep our eyes on that sport as much as we always can. So we're going to get to that momentarily, but let's talk about this game, because this is a game in which I didn't really feel like Michigan was going to win until the six, they went up by 6 points near the end. There was never a point, even at the beginning of the game, Michigan just did not seem like it had, it didn't seem like it had a beat on MSU. And when Hunter Dickinson had like 2 points in the middle of the game, didn't seem to be a focal point of the offense, didn't seem to be able to get anything going. It seemed like Michigan really had to work for everything, whereas Michigan State just getting clear lanes, right? That's just what it seemed like, and it probably was true. 34 points in the paint for Michigan State compared to, I mean, it was 30 for Michigan, but then on top of it, the fast breaks. And I know I don't think they had a ton of fast break points, only six, but just the fact that they were able to do that transition offense so effectively. And Michigan's defense just really, it didn't feel like Michigan's defense was stopping Michigan State as much as it felt like Michigan State's shots just weren't falling at times. Whereas for Michigan, it seemed like Michigan State was stopping them. Their defense just seemed to, it felt like they were playing with like 6-7 guys out there at times. So I am kind of surprised to some degree that they were able to go out there and get the win. And they were able to do it for two reasons that we haven't been able to really talk about recently. And that's closing the game. They have not been able to close games at all. Tie game late, that doesn't feel good, right? When they're up three and then MSU hits that three, you're like, all right, here we go. I know how this script goes. I know exactly how this plays out. But it didn't. And it seems kind of crazy to me that it didn't. But the other aspect of it that was surprising to me was Michigan got 18 bench points, number one, with Will Shetter being a starter, so not being even a bench player. And that paid huge dividends. But even though Hunter Dickinson ended up finishing with 14 points on the game, it was just the group effort. I'm making sure I'm looking at the right thing. Yes, 14 points. It was the group effort that we've been talking about all season long that has been sorely lacking, that outside of Hunter Dickinson, who's going to be that guy? And there were so many different guys that were that guy. Doug McDaniel clearly was number one. I mean, he came out on fire with the first 7 points of the game, set a tone. I actually would have liked to seen him shoot it more, but at some point they were seemingly just not going to let him. He was just going to be kind of driven to that left side of the arc, not allowed a lot of penetration. It just seemed like it came in waves, right? Because it started with Doug McDaniel, and then you started seeing other guys get going. Took a little while before Kobe Bufkin got going, but eventually he did, and that was impressive. And then, like, late in the game, obviously Jet Howard was not quite late in the game before his injury, really started to seem like he was getting going. He had 10 points in the game. It just felt like he was starting to finally find that rhythm that we've kind of are always waiting to see, and didn't really quite materialize or matriculate because of the injury, which hopefully he's okay, but it did not look good. And then down the stretch, Terrace Reed and Joey Baker just really putting daggers in. Terrace Reed was 2 points away from a double-double, which was really impressive, but just the head up attitude that he had. And obviously Gus Johnson really hammered a lot of that home. But just on that one play where he had the block and then he found the ball, that is a heady play that you normally don't necessarily see freshmen make. And if he just hit a couple more free throws, he was 2 for 5 from the line. He had that opportunity to get that double-double. It was right there for him. But he played phenomenal as well. And Joey Baker did hit 10 points, did not have 10 rebounds like Terrace Reed did. But his he hit 2 threes, and they were timely. This is the exact type of thing that you want to see from your bench. And then you add in Will Shetter getting 7 points, which was kind of almost shocking because I sat there and thought during the game, because I didn't write about it. Trent Noop wrote about it. So I just watched it with the intention of, I'm going to come on here and talk about it on the podcast with y'all. And I was ready to just come on and just go scorch. Because number one, I thought Michigan was going to lose. Number two, I was ready to go scorched earth on Will Shetter. And then he kind of totally redeemed himself, in the words of the movie Dumb and Dumber. He came out and got some offense going, because it the early attempts at offense weren't good. Was definitely a liability on the defensive side, and it made me wonder why anyone was ever calling for him to be in the game. And yet he made that three, and then he made a couple really amazing drives. It didn't feel like Michigan was able to get a lot of dribble penetration at times. It seemed like they were really kind of stuck to the boundary. But he was one of those guys that made two of those plays where he got inside and made a play. Everything you want. So, really commendable effort by Michigan. We'll talk about the pregame. We'll talk and then we'll kind of go from where they go from here. I do want to address some MSU fodder, which is from it certainly is from a minority in this case, but I want to address it. And then we'll get to the football. PFF did a pretty cool ranking, and Michigan had 8 guys on it, so I want to get to that here momentarily. So we're going to do that. Before we do, the midway point of the NBA season is here, and now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sports book, because new customers get first bet up to $1,000. That's bonus bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Then you can bet on everything from the money line to point scores and threes drained. Plus, FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with same game parlay. So don't miss out on the chance to get your no sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/lockedon. That's FanDuel.com/lockedon to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. All right. So I wanted to talk about the game first, but I want to address the pregame and everything that Michigan did, and then some MSU fan reactions to that. The minority, I'm not going to go crazy over it, but I do want to address part of it. So number one, it was very touching and very moving that, I mean, this is the biggest basketball rival, right? There's not the same animosity as there is in football, that's for sure, in the basketball rivalry, but it's clearly a bigger rivalry than Ohio State in basketball. We covered that a couple weeks back. So the fact that Michigan, you know, that you had the Maze Rage and the wearing the same shirts that they wore in the warmups of Michigan stands with MSU. Everyone has these green bracelets, the pep band playing the MSU on alma mater on the banks of the Red Cedar. I'm not sure if that's what it's called. I just know that, you know, hearing the melody, that's the first line. And them making the stadium inside green. I mean, that's great. That's what should happen. It wouldn't really matter what team it is, right? If that happened at Minnesota, if it happened at Purdue, I believe Michigan would do the same thing. But it means a little more that the solidarity came against in a rivalry that honestly is just far too toxic. right? I'm on the record. I am one that thinks that football should take a multi-year timeout. It's gotten far too toxic. And that's become even more evident in the battle with sports writers. I've had my... It's funny because it's like the guys who have been around for a while that I know, we're all good, right? Like, you know, Sean Shearer and I were coworkers at 24/7. And I'm trying to think of other guys that I know on the Spartan beat. Certainly, I know like Matt Charbonneau. I've never really met Chris Solari. Justin Rose and I are really good friends. He's not in the sports world anymore, but certainly a dedicated Spartan. You know, there's all of that, but I had a run in a couple of years ago with Justin Thin, who's over at 24/7 now and RCMB. And I've had some fine banter back and forth every now and again with Justin Spiro, who has his own thing, the Spiro Avenue podcast. But they're attacking my good friend Chris Ballas for what they presume he meant with what he said on his message board. Basically was just saying this rivalry has gotten too toxic. It's not surprising that bad things happen when there's a heated rhetoric coming out of that town. Now, you can debate whether or not Chris should have said it. I'm fine with it personally, because that's also what I believe. I don't think that that's the motive of the shooter or anything, and I don't think that's what Chris was saying, and it's not what I'm saying either. But it's their message boards were already a cesspool about even just the Michigan doing the pregame stuff, right? Because you had all these people that wanted to sit there and say that this was all an orchestrated thing for Michigan to pat itself on the back, and you know, the Michigan PR machine doing it. And there's plenty of guys out there that were calling this out, right? And saying like, what else are they going to, like, if they didn't do anything, you'd complain. They do something, you complain. There's nothing that they can do that's going to make you satisfied. And it goes to the next level with, you know, calls to On3 to get Chris Ballas fired, who's one of my best friends in this world. I'm not just defending him. I'm defending the sentiment of what he's saying, in the sense of the pushback, which is to take it out of context and say that Michigan State's asking for it, is it's an emblem of the toxicity in this rivalry, which is why it was good to see things happen the way that they did today. You know, Michigan doing its thing. There was like a lot of mutual respect. You saw Juwan Howard before the game give one of those warm-ups and Maze Race t-shirts to Tom Izzo. It was good to see the respect on the court. It would just be nice if those who, the minority, can get over themselves in this and realize, we're all human, and it ain't that serious. Number two, that Michigan people, and you all know this if you're watching this, are not bad. It's been this delusion that some have convinced themselves of, that if you are a Michigan person, whether you're a student, an alum, a fan, that you are evil. And it's just so beyond untrue. And when a tragedy happens like this and Michigan does what it's supposed to, and it's a moment for everyone to come together and say, especially in the light of what happened on the football field, like, hey, you know what? Let's take a step back from all of this toxicity and embrace one another. I thought the sign was kind of cool that, you know, someone crossed out, had a little brother and crossed off little and said, love you, brother. I thought that was actually really cool, because it's acknowledging the Michigan end that has helped spurn on some of the toxicity, in at least in the Michigan State eyes, and replaced it with something that's more, has more solidarity. And yet, you know, I wanted to see, so I went on to the MSU message boards and looked, and of course they were super upset about it and say, why would he do that unless it was to anger us? It's like, you got to take a step back and recognize Michigan is not, and Michigan fans, Michigan brass, all of that, not out to get you the way you think. And it was good to see that for the most part, I've seen for the most part that people were touched by the tributes. And I hope that that really is how people feel en masse. Because really, truly, we're all people. I know we all love sports, college sports, University of Michigan sports. In the end, it is not that serious. It is not. There are so many things that are way more serious in this world. It's a way for us to come together, win or lose. And if Michigan would have lost, I'd have the same message. I hope that we can focus on the things that matter. Ultimately, petty rivalries don't. They're supposed to be fun. I'm glad that I think most people recognize that. I saw some good comments from some of the aforementioned names about the game, about what the Michigan program did, all of that stuff. But really, we've got to find a way to move past some of the ridiculousness in this particular rivalry. And I thought today was a good step towards that in a lot of ways. Hopefully that can sustain. But you've got the hangers-on that just want to believe that they want to watch this video, see that it's Locked On Wolverines, see that I'm wearing this Disney Mickey shirt, Michigan shirt rather, and just automatically assume the worst. And we've got to find our inner humanity one way or another. All right, I'm off my soapbox. I want to talk about this. I spent a lot of time on that. I don't think I'm going to spend any more time on the game. I think I covered everything that I really wanted to cover. So let's move into football just for a few minutes. A couple things that were surprising me on this PFF list. Let's get to it here momentarily. All right, so PFF did a really interesting list. Actually, it was eight top 10 lists. Of the top 10 players returning in 2023 across college football. And Michigan had 8 guys make 6 different position groups. Maybe it was 9 position groups, but 6 guys or 6, 8 guys in 6 position groups. Now, some of them you can guess, right? Blake Corum, obviously, going to be on that list. Actually, he's probably the only one to me that was like, obviously, they're putting him on there. And he was number 1 overall of the running backs. Donovan Edwards was number 8. What an embarrassment of riches there. Now, Ohio State had the top 2 receivers, Marvin Harrison Jr. and Emeka Egbuka, in that order. But J.J. McCarthy was number 7, the number 7 returning quarterback. I think that that's great, right? Because, like, we have not seen him reach the pinnacle yet. And I don't mean the championship game. I don't think we have seen his anywhere close to his full potential, his capability. He's number 7 of the top 10 returning quarterbacks. That's going to help out a lot for Michigan in 2023. Especially spring ball starts in 2 days, starts on Monday. So those are they had 2 other offensive guys. And then they've got 3 on defense. Or 2, yeah, 3 on defense. So you had not, and here's where I start to lose some of the numbers. I do know number 3 in interior offensive line was Zach Zinter. No Trevor Keegan, but Zach Zinter did make the cut at number 3. Drake Nugent was 5th or 6th, which kind of speaks to, you know, like I hear other people talking about the offensive line and the center and the thought of like who of these transfers. I don't know if I'm the only one banging this Drake Nugent train, but I feel like I am. Because whenever I read other articles and stuff like that, depth charts, Drake Nugent has tended to be behind like Raheem Anderson or Zach Zinter sliding inside. Michigan has someone more than capable there. I mean, again, the interior offensive lineman, not top 10 centers, top 10 interior offensive linemen, Drake Nugent comes in at 5 or 6. I can't remember the number. So that's big. Then there's 3 guys on defense. Will Johnson impressively comes in at the number 3 spot in the cornerbacks. Why is that impressive considering what we've seen from him? And he looked great and was second on the team in interceptions and all of that. Well, because really he only got a half a year's worth of run, truly. I remember like the first time I saw him out there, game one, he looked lost. And so for him to go from lost to the number three corner returning, entering his second year is really impressive because he didn't really start to get that run until the Rutgers game forward. And even then, yeah, he had an interception in that game. It took a minute for the lights to turn on, and then eventually they really turned on. So that's huge. Chris Jenkins comes in, I believe, is the number four or five. I can't remember offhand. Defensive tackle. And I think that's well-deserved. And I think that that's awesome that there's now an expectation of the defensive tackles after Michigan had a really good run with them, and then they wandered in the wilderness for a while with the interior defensive line. And now you've got, you know, all eyes were on Mazi Smith last year. I think Mason Graham probably got talked about more because of the surprising nature of him as a freshman. And, you know, you have the, you know, gift from the football gods of it all with him and Kenneth Grant and all of that. But Chris Jenkins, especially with his run-stopping prowess, gets that high mark. And then the last one, which shouldn't be surprising, but for some reason it was. Again, I don't remember the ranking. It was somewhere in the middle of the pack, 5-6, something like that, was Rod Moore at safety. Remember, Jim Harbaugh said that if he, you know, he's a young player, and if he would have graduated high school on pace when most guys graduate high school, had that extra year, he said he would have been a 5-star. And I mean, he led the team in interceptions. He was phenomenal. But, and I know like it's, I don't think anyone here is sleeping on Rod Moore, but I think from a national perspective, when you have him listed as being a top 5-6 type safety in the country, no one would have believed you 2 years ago at this time that that would be what was being said. Just again, getting a 3-star from Ohio, I think to some degree part of the trust the coaches stuff that I tend to rail on. But I think the most impressive thing about this whole ordeal, having 8 guys, is I don't know if they did the same list. I very well might have written about it last year. If they did, I guarantee you that there was not more than 2 Michigan players on it. The last couple of years, it's been like, all right, every school has way more talent, way more guys to be excited about than Michigan. And even coming off of the Big Ten championship and the college football playoff, it was kind of seen as like, well, they did it because of Aiden Hutchinson. They did it because of David Ajabo and Hassan Haskins. And they're not going to do it again. And then they do it again. And I think now eyes are kind of opening to the amount of talent that helped propel Michigan to a repeat campaign last year. So it is very cool. Get excited. Spring ball is literally around the corner. By the time I record my Monday podcast, I'm sure they'll have had their first practice. And they're going to try to run it back. And you've got 8 guys that are considered, by PFF at least, to be in the top 10, the top percentile of their position groups. Think about, there's 133 teams in the FBS level. And multiple of these positions have more than one guy on the field, quarterback notwithstanding. Yes, it's returning players, and I'm sure that you can't really count on freshmen, like what guys are going to come in or what guys may be redshirted and are ready to explode, things of that nature. It's a pretty cool thing to see that many guys, and the embarrassment of riches in the running backs room, having 2 guys on the offensive line, and yet Drake Nugent's not the one people are talking about. It's even as a transfer, people are talking about Ladarius Henderson. People are talking about Miles Hinton. People are talking about Trevor Keegan, and deservedly so. And to have that many guys that you can sit there and say, I can count on this guy, and the people in the national media saying, these are going to be some of the best players in college football. When you know there's all other kinds of guys, Junior Colson, that should take that step forward. Michigan still has Mekari Page. They still have R.J. Moton. Nakaiho Green, if he comes back. Michael Barrett showed out late. Braden McGregor, Jalen Harrell, Derek Moore. All those receivers. So many different guys that could really suddenly just break out, that are poised to break out. But we have a feeling that these eight that we're talking about already have. It's good stuff. All right, that's going to do it for today's episode. We are going to be back on Monday, and I'm sure we'll get into something spring practice and do the whole week all over again. Hope y'all make your way to church if you're watching this before Sunday morning. And I will talk to you soon. Thanks for watching. Thank you for listening. Peace.